Well, hello, friends. Mark DeMatteo coming at you with a brand new message going out to my Great Questions group on this eighth day of October 2016. This is actually, folks, a special message. The title of it is America Really a Democracy? Is America Really a Democracy? Therefore, it does not have a number because it's not in the sequence with the normal general messages I have been sending out. But I believe it's something that is timely and will be informative for the vast majority of folks, as it was for me when I first became aware of some of this information. So let's get into it because I'm excited about sharing it with you all. Okay. And by the way, trust this finds everybody doing well. All right. And enjoying this early part of fall here in the U.S., in the mid-Atlantic U.S. anyway. So here we go. With those of us here in the U.S. preparing to choose a new president, along with quite a few other elected public representatives and officials shortly, I thought it might be timely to send out a special Great Questions group message to share a few key points with you regarding our American system of government that might perhaps be illuminating. Many of you know that I have been and still am a life coach, the primary function of which is helping those that are interested learn important life skills that we are often not taught through our formal education. One of these life skills is having at least a basic understanding of the system of government we live under here in the U.S. Personally, I must admit, in my early years, I had little knowledge nor interest in this topic. Fortunately, however, I have had the privilege of being mentored by some wise folks who opened my mind to a foundational awareness of this subject and its importance. Later, as I pursued my Great Questions quest, I decided to also research this area a little more thoroughly myself. Overall, it was quite illuminating as I gained a more accurate historical understanding of the founding of our great nation and the system of government it was set up with. Folks, you and I often hear America being referred to as a democracy, right? I'm sure you all have, okay? That we here in the good old USA have a democratic system of government. Just for instance, I recently received a flyer in the mail, which is trying to recruit election officials or officers for the up and coming election. And the tagline was, in big bold letters, "Make democracy work." But are we really a democracy here in the U.S.? Interestingly, we were not actually formed as a democracy, but rather as a republic. I'm sure you all remember our Pledge of Allegiance, right? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, and liberty with justice for all. But the key phrase there is to the republic for which it stands. So what's the difference, folks? Fundamentally, okay, on a very simple level, very basic level, because there's a lot of little subtleties, but just a couple of key points here. It has to do with two basic points. Number one, where do the laws come from? And number two, who gets to have a say? Okay, number one, where do the laws come from? Number two, who gets to have a say? Both are representative forms of government, where citizens elect other citizens to represent them in the governing process. But in a democracy, the laws are ultimately only based on what the majority think is right at the time. Initially, this might sound like it's okay, but historically, it has always created problems. Why? Because there is nothing in place protecting the rights of the individual but majority opinion. For instance, being a bit extreme but still making a point, if the majority suddenly think it's okay to kill anyone over 6'5", and they can get those in office to pass a law saying so, then it becomes okay. Maybe we shouldn't say okay, it becomes law, and then people have the right to be able to do that, okay? It's maybe a better way to say it. And as such, there would be nothing protecting the personal rights of that minority of people who are quite tall, okay? That's point number one. Secondly, in a democracy, everyone has a say, a vote, even if they are not contributing, paying taxes. This second point has not only created problems, but ultimately has caused every historical democracy to fail. Why? Well, because as soon as people that don't contribute realize that they can vote in people that promise to give them something for doing nothing, it begins a destructive trend. For not only does it give more incentive to those same people who are not contributing to continue not contributing, it also promotes others to become non-contributors too. After all, if you can get paid for doing nothing, why change, right? The problem is the money has to come from somewhere. But I used to think, well, if the government's paying for it, what's the big deal? They've got plenty of money, right? But then I had my eyes opened. Many years ago, I had the opportunity to visit Amway's world headquarters in Ada, Michigan. There was a monument out front upon which were displayed the 10 pillars of economic wisdom. Apparently, these same pillars were also displayed in the Hall of Free Enterprise at the 1964 New York City World's Fair. And you can find them online. They're all over the place. But here we go. I had never heard of them before, and reading them was quite a revelation. Right now, I will share with you just the first three, although I will post all 10 on my website so that you can check them out later, okay? But here are the first three. Number one, nothing in our material world can come from nowhere or go nowhere, nor can it be free. Everything in our economic life has a source, a destination, and a cost that must be paid. I must admit, when I was first reading that or rereading this, it reminded me of one of the laws that I was referring to or have been referring to in our general messages called the law of cause and effect, right? Okay, moving on. Point number two. Listen to this. Government is never a source of goods. Everything produced is produced by the people. And everything that government gives to the people, it must first take from the people. How about that? Number three, the only valuable money that government has to spend is that money taxed or borrowed out of the people's earnings. When government decides to spend more than it has thus received, that extra unearned money is created out of thin air through the banks and, when spent, takes on value only by reducing the value of all money, savings, and insurance. So, the bottom line is, folks, there is no such thing as a free lunch. Someone has to pay for it. Therefore, since the government is not an actual source of money, when they give it to more and more people that don't contribute, they have to take more and more of it from those that do. And the way they do this is either by increasing the taxes the contributors have to pay, or by creating money from nothing, which devalues all the money we now have. If this process continues beyond a certain point, there aren't enough productive people left who are either willing or able to pay for it, and the entire system will ultimately collapse. So our founders already knew this, and that is why they did not set up the U.S. as a democracy. Rather, they chose to set it up as a republic. So how is a republic different? Well, first, only those that actually contribute get to have a say, a vote. Since they are technically the ones paying all the government's bills, they are also those who should have the right to oversee and guide the way government spends their money. And I say they're the contributors' money, because that's where the government gets it from. Therefore, they will be more motivated to elect responsible people who will be better stewards of the money they have been entrusted with. Furthermore, those contributing will also be far more likely to hold those people accountable while they are in office to ensure that they are actually using those funds in a wise and prudent manner. Our founders knew that this would be the best means to make sure that monies were spent responsibly, within limits, and only in areas that were truly necessary and on those that were truly in need. Secondly, in a republic, there are also fundamental laws in place that ensure, quote, liberty and justice for all, unquote, just like our pledge says, regardless of whether someone is 6'5" or not. Interestingly, that is why we are specifically a constitutional republic. Our republic is guided by our U.S. Constitution, because our Constitution is the framework within which it is meant to operate. Furthermore, in our republic, the highest purpose of these laws is to protect the rights of the individual. For example, let me quote a line from our Declaration of Independence, which I'm sure is familiar to most. Quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed or provided by their Creator with certain inalienable, inseparable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." I'm sure most of you have heard that before. Additionally, as borne out by the reference to a Creator in this quote, it is historically significant that our founders believed that these individual rights came not from the dictates of other men, but from God. Therefore, since they were given to us by God Himself, they believed that no other person, group, government, or nation should have the ability to take those rights away. So far, the concept has worked, as the U.S. remains the longest-standing constitutional republic in the history of the world. And though certainly not without our flaws, as the latter part of our pledge declares, we remain one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now, with this distinction in mind, I want to make one other important point before I close. Folks, I can remember when I was in my early teens, I had two friends that I spent a fair amount of time with, actually from way before I was in my early teens, okay? They were two of my best friends growing up. And when we would hang out occasionally, either because an election was going on or something would cause us to talk about it, the topic would come up and we would briefly talk about my one friend's parents being Democrats, my other friend's parents being Republicans, and my own parents being registered independents at the time. But none of us back then really had any idea what the difference was. Later, when I was attending school in Italy, I was shocked to find out that they had both a socialist and a communist party in that country. At the time, I knew little about the Italian form of government, but I certainly knew it wasn't either one of those, right? Anyway, just as a little aside, I subsequently found out that Italy in 1946 also became a constitutional republic, a little bit differently organized, but still another constitutional republic, interestingly enough. But anyway, back to my notes here. I wondered about this at the time, about the Communist Party and the Socialist Party in Italy. And so I asked one of my teachers at the time, and he told me that most free countries have different parties because there are always different groups of people, some large and some small, that have different ideas on how their country should be run. So they form political parties, and each party promotes a different form of government. So in this case, the Socialist Party believes in and promotes a socialist form of government, the Communist Party, a communist form of government, etc. Learning this should have shed some light on the questions my two friends and I had been asking, but I didn't connect the dots at the time. However, once I was back here in the U.S. and had come under the influence and the mentoring of the folks I referred to as I began this message, I started to see the simple truth that regarding the two major parties here in the U.S., in the main, the Democratic Party believes in and promotes a democratic form of government, or in other words, a democracy, and the Republican Party, a republican form of government, or a republic. Now, having said thus, it must also be added that it is doubtful that either party or the candidates they offer totally embrace the platform they were once created under. And interestingly, there are now a number of newer, presently smaller parties that probably more nearly align with the original intent our founders had when they framed our system of government. Still, understanding the basic difference between the democracy and a republic, why we were set up as the latter rather than the former, and the relationship between the Democratic Party and a democracy and the Republican Party as a republic was quite illuminating. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to share this same information with many people in my networking and life coaching circles, and found it was as illuminating to most of them as it had been to me. So, since our election is fast approaching, I thought I'd take a few moments and share it with you all in my Great Questions group as well, in the hope that it may be helpful to many of you too. And one final thought. I heard a statement once that someone who won't read is no better off than someone who can't. And folks, in like manner, someone who will not exercise their right and privilege to vote is no better off than those that are not allowed to. So let's all make sure that we do, even though it is often choosing the lesser of two evils these days, right? Okay. And in closing, if any of you that are listening to this message are not part of our group yet, and you would like to be a part of this Great Questions group and receive the links to any new audios that I release, you may connect at my website, which is markdematteo.com, markdematteo.com, where all my previously released audios are posted. And also, if you'd like to check out the rest of those 10 pillars of economic wisdom, I'll have them posted there as well. Okay, so hey folks, this is Marcus D signing off, gang, and wishing you all another wonder-filled day. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.